Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to IndiGo's conference call to discuss the second quarter of fiscal year 2022 financial results. My name is Aman, and I'll be your coordinator. At this time, the participants are in listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow today's management discussion. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I now like to turn the call over to your moderator, Ms. Richa Chhabra from the Investor Relations team of IndiGo. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the second quarter of fiscal year 2022 earnings call. We hope that you and your families are safe and in good health. We have with us our Chief Executive Officer, Rono Joy Datta, and our Chief Financial Officer, Jiten Chopra, to take you through our performance for the quarter. Wolfgang Krogshauer, our Chief Operating Officer, Sanjay Kumar, our Chief Strategy and Revenue Officer, and Kiran Koteshwar, our Head of Investor Relations and Sustainability, are also with us and are available for the Q&A session. Before we begin, please note that today's discussion may contain certain statements on our business or financials which may be construed as forward-looking. Our actual results may be materially different from these forward-looking statements. The information provided on this call is as of today's date, and we undertake no obligation to update this information subsequently. A transcript of today's call will be archived on our website. We will upload the transcript of today's prepared remarks by day end. The transcript of the Q&A session will be uploaded subsequently. With this, let me hand over the call to Rono Datta.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining the call. Hope all of you are keeping safe through this COVID period. We announced our second quarter fiscal year 2022 financial results today. We reported a net loss of 14.4 billion rupees for the quarter ending September 2021 as compared to a net loss of 31.7 billion rupees for June quarter of 2022 and a net loss of 11.9 billion rupees for the September quarter last year. The reduction in COVID cases in the country, the increased pace of vaccination, and relaxation of the testing norms by the various state governments has helped to stimulate demand during September 2021 quarter. In line with the increased demand, the government initially raised the domestic capacity caps from 65% at the end of June to 85% mid-September, and recently removed these capacity restrictions altogether. Further, international destinations and frequencies were increased under the bubble arrangements. All these factors had a favorable impact on our revenues. We carried around 6.3 million passengers in June quarter, which rapidly expanded to 11.2 million passengers in the September quarter, an increase of around 79%. Overall, we were able to deploy around 41% additional capacity in the September quarter as compared to the June quarter. Our load factors increased to 71.1% in the September quarter as compared to 58.7% in June 2021 quarter. And our yields have gone up by around 20% to 4.19 rupees. These factors have led to a quarter-over-quarter increase in RASK by 32.1% to 3.60 rupees. On ancillary revenue, our cargo operations continue to witness growth. In the September quarter, cargo revenues have increased by 16% as compared to the June quarter. We anticipate a potential structural shift from traditional wide bodies to narrow body cargo aircraft. And with the upcoming freighters, we will be able to take full advantage of this opportunity. Our international capacity deployed increased by 58% as compared to the June quarter, reaching around one-third of our pre-COVID international capacity levels. We are in constant dialogue with the ministry to open more international destinations. Also, we have recently entered one-way codeshare agreement with American Airlines. We are confident that this will be a strong partnership that will create increased opportunities for trade and tourism through IndiGo's seamless nationwide connectivity. On the cost side, the deployment of higher capacity in this quarter has helped spread our fixed costs, resulting in a CASK ex-fuel reducing by 27.3% to 3.25 rupees quarter over quarter. However, due to headwind in fuel prices, our fuel CASK has gone up 16.2% on a sequential basis to 1.26 rupees. As you're aware, our fleet modernization program continues, and during the quarter, we inducted 11 fuel-efficient NEOs and returned 13 CEOs. We, of course, continue to occupy the number one position when it comes to on-time performance. In addition to a targeted improvement in all our operational parameters, we are also driving leadership in the area of sustainability by becoming the first Indian airline to release a comprehensive ESG report. IndiGo Green is a testimony to our commitment towards a sustainable future and towards responsible growth. Our expectation is that our third quarter fiscal 2022 capacity in terms of ASKs will increase by around 40% as compared to the second quarter of fiscal year 2022. We are encouraged by the booking trends in October and beyond. We are currently anticipating that our October load factors will be around 76%. Our average revenue booked per day in October is now equal to pre-COVID level of revenue booked per day in January 2020, pre-COVID. It is important to note that we are matching January 2020 level daily booked revenues while offering 20% fewer ASKs. On the negative side, oil prices continue to march relentlessly higher. Pre-COVID, oil prices were averaging $65 a barrel, whereas now it is averaging $85 per barrel. Thus, things are looking better on the revenue side, but the increase in input costs are cause for concern. Looking back, we have had several quarters of unacceptable losses which have dented our balance sheet. It is now time for repair and healing. But I want to take this opportunity to thank our employees for running a quality airline, paying attention to the customer, and for being nimble in generating non-traditional sources of revenue such as cargo and passenger charters. Now that it looks like we are finally emerging out of the COVID crisis, we are turning our attention back to the two key principles of our business model, namely, continue to keep our costs down and grow rapidly. To summarize, revenues are fast returning to normalcy. Fuel prices are worrisome. We need a rapid return to profitability in order to strengthen our balance sheet. And we are excited about the growth opportunities that lie ahead of us. With this, let me hand over the call to our CFO, Jiten Chopra.
Thank you, Rono, and good evening, everyone. For the quarter ended September 2021, we reported a net loss of 14.4 billion rupees compared to a net loss of 31.7 billion rupees for the quarter ended June 21 and a net loss of 11.9 billion rupees for the September quarter last year. We reported a positive EBITDA of 3.4 billion rupees compared to a negative EBITDA of 13.6 billion rupees in the quarter ended June 21 and a positive EBITDA of 4.1 billion rupees for the September quarter last year. In the September quarter, we operated at 61% of a pre-COVID capacity as compared to 44% in the June quarter. This higher capacity deployment has helped improve our performance metrics. Some of the key measures for the September quarter as compared to June quarter are, we operated at a load factor of 71.1%, an increase of 12.4 points. We had a yield of 4.19 rupees, an increase of 20.4%, and a RASK of 3.6 rupees, an increase of 32.1%. Our CASK ex-fuel reduced by 27.3%, primarily due to increase in capacity deployed and positive impact of foreign exchange movement. We were, though, negatively impacted on the fuel cost as our fuel CASK increased by 16.2% compared to the June quarter. Due to the improved revenue environment, our average cash burn per day reduced by around 39% in the September quarter. Further, we ended the quarter with a free cash of 63.5 billion rupees, a net increase of 7.3 billion rupees as compared to June quarter. On the other key balance sheet numbers, we ended the quarter with a total debt of 323.4 billion rupees, including capitalized operating lease liability of 275.6 billion rupees. With the impact of second wave abating and additional capacity deployment, we are likely to show an improving trend in all our performance matrices in the forthcoming quarter. We continue to focus on keeping our costs under control and providing world-class services to our customer. With this, let me hand it back to Richa.
Thank you, Rono and Jiten. To answer as many questions as possible, I would like to request that each participant limit themselves to one question and one brief question if needed. And with that, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question at this time, they may please press star and one. First question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. So just a couple of questions. So firstly, regarding the yield, what is the key driver for the increase in the quarter? Is it just the fare caps or is it something else which can potentially be more sustainable? And you mentioned about a path to profitability despite the higher cost structure. Again, can you talk about a little bit of that as to how you plan to get there?
Okay, so first on the yields, there clearly is some pent-up demand that's obvious, particularly international market. As each market opens up, whether it's Oman or Kuwait or Dubai, every market that opens up, there's a huge surge of demand, if you will, and prices are high as a result. Fortunately, they're not also declining rapidly. They start off high, they come down a little bit, but they continue to remain at pretty attractive levels. The same is true domestically. We are pretty pleased with the pricing performance. Internationally, of course, it's not a pricing cap issue. On domestic, the pricing cap that the government put in place, I'm sure, has some impact. But remember, against that, fuel prices are really up. So I think the industry is being fairly responsible, being conscious of the cost pressures that the higher fuel raises, in not being in pricing responsibly. So your question is it sustainable? Yes, I think it is. Now, to the second question of what is the return to profitability, clearly we have to work on the revenue front and the cost front. The best thing that can happen on the cost front is to put more and more capacity into the market in a responsible fashion. And we are pleased that our aircraft utilization continues to march upwards week over week as we add more and more capacity. As you know, the government has removed all capacity caps domestically. Internationally, we are hopeful that more bubble arrangements will be signed with places like Singapore, Saudi Arabia, Malaysia. These all seem to be negotiations in progress. And as it happens, we'll benefit both on the revenue front and on the cost front. So yes, I do believe that we are going to keep improving our profitability quarter over quarter as best as we can forecast.
And sir, if I can just follow up on that, on since you mentioned international, the 40% growth on ASKs, could you give a rough split as to what would be domestic versus international?
I don't think we don't have that breakup handy right now, but let me tell you, roughly we had one third of our pre-COVID capacity internationally and about 85 to 90% of our domestic capacity. So on a weighted average basis, our capacity is down 20% from pre-COVID levels. Unfortunately, I don't have the breakup for domestic versus international.
Okay. Thank you so much.
But you can approach Richa and she'll be happy to share that with you.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi team, thanks for the opportunity. First question is that, you know, when we are looking at October, where the business is just down 20% versus pre-COVID capacity, and the yields are holding quite well, how close are you to cash break-even now? Looking at October, where you are close to 80% of pre-COVID level, how close are you to cash break-even now? That's the first question. And secondly, any comments on corporate travel? Are you starting to see any pickup over there? Thanks.
Okay. So cash, I won't be able to give you a forecast. I think Jitin talked about a cash number, burn numbers coming down. When does it go back to profitability? Let's talk about on a P&L basis. What do we think is going to happen? As I said, I think quarter over quarter we will continue to improve. Fortunately, as you know, November, December are very strong months. But equally, unfortunately, the following quarter, February, March, tends to taper off a little. I think we'll be skirting with profitability somewhere in there, but exactly when that happens is too early to say. Your second question was corporate travel. I'll let Sanjay Kumar answer that.
So we have seen almost 50% recovery of the corporate travel compared to the pre-COVID levels of January 2020. And what we are seeing and getting the feedback from the market is post Deepavali, more and more corporates are going to kind of start traveling. I mean, the limitations and the restrictions which were kind of ongoing by various corporate houses have been kind of taken away now by end of September and partly after Deepavali. And we hope that, the corporate travel will gain momentum post Deepavali. That's what our view is. And we are already seeing the growth of my segment. You know, people have started traveling for meeting and conferences on the corporate side. That's a very welcome sign. People have started traveling on that. So a lot of corporates are now taking group travel already for their meetings and conferences. So that also is a good indicator that corporate travel is slowly coming back. Thank you.
Thanks. Just to clarify, what percentage of mix will it be now?
So as I said, that we are now almost 50% recovered, 50% recovery we have seen on the corporate side of the business. When we talk about the contracted corporate business, which used to be about, pre-COVID level, about 24% of our overall business. So we have seen almost 50% recovery of that. Given the situation we are in today, we hope that, post Deepavali, this will kind of gain momentum.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dean. Thank you for taking my question. I have a couple of questions. So first of all, just want to understand about your networking strategy. So you are growing your network. But then, of course, as we have seen historically, that when you go to the new station, it takes almost like between 6 to 24 months for the demand to develop, depending on the situation. So, how do you see that in your case? I mean, are you going to expand your network, or are you going to consolidate on the existing stations? So, how do you see, and then link to that? How confident you are that you'll be able to deploy your capacity more commercially or profitably going forward, especially given the fact a lot of capacity could join in, as you said yourself, will be focused on growth. So how do you see that overall situation? If you could please discuss a bit more on that.
A couple of good things that have happened to us. First is we've discovered the strength of new markets. As we've said in the couple of last quarters, I think, while metro-to-metro markets had some dampening in demand, we were very pleased with the growth we are seeing in Tier 2, Tier 3 cities. So as a result, a lot of our focus has been there. Now, as corporate travel comes back, we now have an opportunity to add back some capacity metro to metro. So that's one area of growth. The second one clearly is international. And international, while our revenue numbers are strong, they are on far lower capacity levels. So getting back to the capacity level is, again, a huge growth opportunity for us. And then thirdly would be actually pure growth into new markets internationally, which we have not done. We've opened a lot of new stations domestically, but as soon as this, either through bubble arrangements or through charters or through hopefully scheduled operations, we hope to grow internationally as well. So I think growth opportunities are very, very high. We're just waiting for this COVID and its sort of ramifications in terms of international barriers to grow away. And then we'll be then growing both domestically and internationally.
So are you saying that you will continue to grow on your network, or do you think once the demand returns or corporate demand returns, you'll be focused on or more consolidation on the existing network?
So okay, I'll answer it as: are we adding more frequencies or are we expanding our network? The answer is both. We'll be adding more frequencies into existing markets, but at the same time, we'll be expanding our network into new stations as well.
Right, fair enough. My second question is around the industry structure. So basically, as you know, of course, although it's not clear how the Tata Group will operate its overall aviation business, but assuming they'll combine all the airlines into one, how do you see the overall competitive landscape changing for the industry? And of course, linked to that, we are probably going to have two more airlines, Akasa and Jet. Obviously, they'll not be competitive in the right from the start. But overall, they'll gain some bit of market share, you know. So overall, how do you see the industry structure developing in the domestic as well as international skies? Could you please comment on that?
And so I think the consolidation of the Tata Group actually adds some clarity to the industry structure, which would be very helpful, because they will be a full-service carrier. Again, we are speculating. We don't know what the Tata Group is going to do. But all indications are that they will be a full-service carrier, that they will be focusing a lot on international markets, and markets that we don't even compete in, the Londons, the New Yorks, etc. So, and having that whole group sort of working in a full-service carrier mode, I think is good. It's healthy for us. Because there'll be some sort of natural separation in the sense that we'll be a low-cost carrier without business class, without premier economy, etc., and flying narrow bodies in a 7-hour market range. And they will tend to be a Vistara-type model with business class and premier and wide bodies flying into a bigger circle of international markets. So I think that separation is actually healthy. It'll create some discipline in terms of marketing and pricing, and that's good. To the question of Akasa, yes, there'll be another low-cost carrier. And I would say that the market is sort of, India clearly has scope for a full-service carrier. But the field for low-cost carriers will get crowded. I mean, there's Indigo, there's GoAir, there's Spice, now there's Akasa. So that field is getting crowded, and there'll be more competition there. That's how we see it.
And of course, in case Tata decides to run two airlines parallelly, one low cost and one full service, then will be another challenge, you think?
We'll have to see how that evolves, yes. We'll have to see how that evolves.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any participants who wish to ask a question at this time, they may please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Aditya Makharia from HDFC. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Happy to hear the positive commentary after a long time. I just had a question on your planes. Obviously, you're phasing out the CEOs quite nicely, and that helps at a time when fuel prices are, going up. But I was also noticing the fleet of other competitors like GoAir or Vistara, and we see that their NEO planes are also pretty much maybe 30%, 50%, whatever it is. So do you think that this advantage which you have will not really last for that long because others are pretty much catching up? Thanks.
Lower fuel consumption is good. And it's not a competitive advantage, it's an absolute advantage. Because given the pricing in the marketplace, we need to reduce our costs, and our costs come down. It doesn't necessarily mean that prices will come down. As you can see, we are witnessing a reasonably robust pricing environment. And to the extent we bring our costs down, that's great. Now, other people get their costs down. I mean, so what? It's not like the pricing is going to tumble as a result. I think the margins will just expand. Yeah. So, we are doing everything we can to get to a full new fleet. Other people should do the same. I don't see that as an issue for us.
Got it. Second is, obviously, our market share in COVID went up to, I think, 55% plus maybe on the domestic side. Is there any medium-term market share target which you would, you know, be happy with? Because clearly, the moment you cross 50%, it gets that much more difficult to maintain share. You know, there are certain costs which come with maintaining that higher market share. So is there any number you would like to have in mind?
We do not target market share at all. We really just, market share is just a byproduct or a consequence of our actions. What are our actions? Our actions are targeted to running a darned good airline. We want to be a world-class airline. We are a world-class airline, and we continue to want to stay there. After that, if the customer prefers our product, again, that's a nice byproduct. The second thing that we do is we expand our network. So, for example, we just added Dimapur to Delhi nonstop. Well, we got a lot of thank you letters from Nagaland. Hey, we've been waiting for this flight for so long. Now, does the market share go up as a result? Yeah, sure. But we have no targets for market share. We only have targets for good customer service and network expansion.
Got it. Wish you all the best. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Sarfraz Limani from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much. So my question is in respect to the discussion we already had in terms of new entrants coming into the industry. So what are your thoughts in terms of, say, ULCC, which the other peers are also talking about? Thank you.
So ULCC, we've obviously studied that model at great length. And the way, let's take again the Spirit example. Because they are the sort of pioneers of ULCC. And the way they got to where they are is by adding a lot of seats. So they increased their density compared to the Americans and the United, and the costs were lower. In India, that game is played out. I mean, all of us, whether it's Spice, us, Go Air, we have the maximum number of seats in the airplanes. I mean, the regulations don't allow any more seats, so you can't increase that. The second thing that a pioneer like Spirit would do is to charge for all kinds of things and most importantly for baggage. Now the DGC again rules that prevailing order, if you will, and it says first 15 kilos free, after that you can charge. Well, that's an even playing field for everyone. If the DGC says no, everyone can charge for the first 5 kilos, then we'll also be there. So it's very hard for a new entrant to distinguish themselves from Indigo in terms of, oh, we will have lower costs. Fact is, our aircraft ownership costs, as you know, are one of the lowest in the world. Our seat density is the maximum it can be for everyone. Baggage rules apply to everybody. So you can brand it anything you want, but are there any really key distinctive features? We don't seem to think they are.
Thank you. And the second question is, so now we see more concerns on the demand side and definitely will grow from here on as well. What do you think on the yield side? So in the past quarters also, we have been talking that yields in India have been the lowest and will grow from here on. But with this DGCA removing the air bans for, say, 16 days onward, I mean, what do you see? Because the competition in that range has been strong. So any just that you can give in terms of where the e-school could settle?
Okay. So, first of all, we've been pushing the DGCA and the Ministry of Civil Aviation to remove the fare cap beyond 15 days. Because earlier what was happening is, yes, the fares were high, but they were high for too long, and therefore we could not stimulate traffic. That's why our load factors were suffering. By restricting this higher fare for the first 15 days is good, because from 16 days onward, we are now able to stimulate our traffic, and that's why we're seeing load factor improvements. So from an overall revenue management, this is very good. So the government has been fairly responsible in sort of listening to the industry and doing the right thing. What happens if the government says, okay, we are just getting out of this and you guys do what you need to do? I think that would be a welcome step too. I think the industry is mature enough. We can manage our own fortunes and I think we'll all behave responsibly.
Sure. Thank you so much. That's it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pulkit Patni from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
So thank you for taking my questions. My first question is on overall costs. Now that the government has sold Air India, I'm sure there will be initiatives taken in order to support the industry profitability. With that view, do you think this removal of VAT, which has been done by I think four states on ATF, is something that could be a big support to profitability if this is accepted by other states also? That is the first question.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. And all the airlines, we've met with the ministry several times, and we've showed them how out of line indirect taxes are in India. As you know, we pay central excise tax, we pay a VAT fees, then we pay IHG on repair parts, we pay the excise taxes. So we put it all together and we're like very highly taxed as an industry. So the government is listening to us and they also acknowledge some of these inefficiencies that are there in the industry. And I welcome the minister's first initiatives in terms of getting some states at least to remove them. But that's only a handful, and they tend to be the smaller states. We need the bigger states in particular to jump in. But hopefully that's going to happen over time. So, yes, we are hopeful, and it would be a big support for the industry.
Thank you. Similarly, this whole gift city allowing leasing companies to come and given some tax incentives, do you think that could also be sort of profitable in terms of lower lease costs for us over the longer term if that is something that picks up? I'm just trying to understand from an industry profitability perspective, what more could come through over the medium term?
Yeah, so this is Jiten. Yeah, that's possibly if, that gift city is a model which once starts developing and when later is coming through, that will definitely help us. But it's in a nascent stage today, so very difficult to predict how it will evolve. But yes, if the way it's structured and the way government is supporting it, if all the lessors start playing with that, I think it will help support the industry in overall basis.
And in general, to the extent the entire ecosystem evolves. Okay, so we were talking about GIFT City and so forth, and I was saying that the entire ecosystem around aviation, to the extent it develops, will be very, very helpful for the airlines. As you know, whether it's line maintenance, whether it's engine maintenance, whether it's aircraft maintenance, we pay a lot of precious foreign exchange trying to get that to work done. So the government is making a big push that, listen, some of this ecosystem needs to come back to India. And they're trying to work with engine repair shops, trying to work with aircraft maintenance shops to get this done. And so, yeah, we welcome the move. I think the government is very sort of aggressive and ambitious in what it wants to achieve, and it'll be very helpful for all of us.
Sure, sir. And my last question is just trying to understand yields a little better. Would you have any, or can you share a sense of if we remove the whole charters from the base, how much have the yields increased in that case?
No, look, yields have increased across the board. Frankly, they've improved in cargo. They've increased in charters, they've increased domestically, they've increased internationally. So we see comprehensive yield improvement in every segment of what we do. And to an extent, as we've been saying, it's kind of inevitable. Yields in India just dropped way below reasonableness. and they just have to come back. And now I think with all the different strains of traffic, yes, corporate travel is slowly coming back. The SMEs, there's a lot of growth in them, construction companies, traders, and then there's movement of migrant labor as well. So all of these things says that, yeah, it is going to come back, and that, I think, is what we're seeing. It's a structural shift in my mind. It's not a one-time episodic, oh, yields went up.
And since we're speaking of the 28th of October, is that momentum continued even in October, the yield improvement?
As I said in my opening remarks, October, revenues booked per day, average revenues booked per day. So that revenue hasn't traveled yet. It's just booking now. And therefore, it'll travel in November or December. Average revenues booked per day is the same as it was in January 2020, pre-COVID. And this has happened while we're offering 20% less capacity. So you can see the strength in pricing from that one key number.
Fair point, fair point. No, that's very useful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Mongia from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I had a few questions from my side. The first one was I wanted to get a sense from you as to how it would impact the growth in overall international volumes for India, which have grown at 1x GDP versus domestic growing much faster. And B, what kind of impact do you think this event is going to happen on domestic yields for airlines?
I'm not sure I understood the question, frankly. Okay, break it down into one piece. What's the first question?
The first question is that for long, India's international traffic volumes have grown at 1x GDP, whereas domestic has grown much faster. Does privatization of air make any difference to this thesis, and does international start growing faster in line with domestic growth from here on? And does everyone benefit?
I don't think I have an answer to that. Let me just say international. What do we see happening? International, what we see happening is that a lot of carriers have been carrying international traffic in and out of India one stop. So, I was in Milan the other day. I mean, just to give you a little narrative here. And I was desperately trying to get on different airlines. So first I tried Etihad to Doha, to Abu Dhabi, and then Qatar to Doha, and then Emirates to Dubai. And in every one of those airlines, there was a long line of people standing who were all Indians. And I'm like, oh my God, these people are going to Abu Dhabi, or they're going to Doha, they're going to Dubai, ultimately to get to Delhi or Bombay. And that's happened in all directions. Because of Singapore, because of Bangkok, because of Dubai, traffic is carried out of India on a one-step basis. Now we have an opportunity, whether the Tatas do it or IndiGo does it, to carry the traffic nonstop. So it's a shift from a type of traffic. And one stop, as you know, is always lower yielding. So we see this as a great revenue opportunity for Indian carriers, whoever makes use of it. Domestically also, we see growth, as I said, in cities that were before not even on the network. So on both sides, international and domestic, I think that Indian aviation is going in for a period of good revenue growth.
Got that. So coming on the question on yield, let me put it separately. As things stand right now, you are seeing a comprehensive improvement across sectors and yields in the last quarter gone by. And you're expecting that yields would probably remain pretty good incrementally also. What is the risk that you see to the thesis happening? Because in 1Q and 2Q, yields have just gone very, very differently. And if at least I'm confused whether one can even take a call on yields in this sector. So any thoughts from your side, are you stable from here on? And the risk to that would be useful.
Are you saying what are the risks to you? Okay, so the risk to yield is that airlines start behaving irresponsibly, that people run out of cash and say, oh my God, I need to raise cash, and this happens across the world. You have a couple of bad players, or not, I wouldn't say bad, but a couple of weak players who are focused on cash rather than profits and sort of do crazy things. But that is short-lived in my mind. Structurally, I think yields have improved and will continue to improve, and we might have, like you said, what is the risk? There's a risk of one airline sort of trying to raise cash. Other than that, frankly, I don't see too much risk. We've been through a bad period, frankly. COVID, oh my God, it was awful. But we're coming out of it, and I think the structural things are going to take over from the cyclical sort of panic we've had over COVID.
Sure, thanks. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Iqbal Khan from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Sir, just a couple of bookkeeping questions. The rest of the question has already been answered by you. Just want to know the cash burn during the quarter and the cargo revenue, which you mentioned that it has increased 16% sequentially.
So, cash burn. Let Jiten answer the question.
So, cash burn, yes. As I mentioned in my script, we have significantly improved from last quarter. And right now, our cash burn is down from what we reported in the last quarter. Right now, we are at about 20 crores per day compared to what we reported in the last quarter, which is about 39%. In terms of the cargo, what was the question?
Let me address the cargo question. So there are some structural shifts taking place in cargo. First of all, let's keep in mind that both export-import volumes into India are growing. The economy is strong and international trade is growing. So that itself creates a volume of its own. Secondly, wide-body capacity worldwide is down. And thirdly is regulation. So there were airlines like Cathay and Korean who were doing a lot of one-step cargo out of India, and the government has recently put a kibosh on that, so that's not allowed. And the fourth is, as you know, shipping itself is in some sort of congestion, ports, etc., congested, and shipping is a challenge. So you look at all these different factors. Regulation is in our favor. Shipping to airline substitution is in our favor. Indian volumes are growing. So with all that, cargo really is a good story and will continue to be a good story going forward. So yes, our cargo volumes are growing, but we haven't even started with freighters yet. And we are, as you know, from May onwards, we're getting 4 narrow-body freighters. So we think cargo is going to be a good story going forward.
Thank you, sir. That's answering the question. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Just a question, like when you look at, I'm trying to get a sense on, does Indigo have any sort of a pricing power or a yield power over peers? Because post-COVID now your network is much stronger. You know, the airline has done quite well in terms of on-time performance and customer complaints. So does that give you some sort of a extra yield sort of premium that you can charge to the consumer? Any sort of takeaways from how yields in high competition sectors like the metros are doing for you versus your peer group?
Okay, so let's first start with the basic fundamentals. Airlines worldwide have no pricing power. Okay, we are commodities. People will spend a 1,000 extra rupees on cabs and hotels, and they won't spend 50 extra rupees on an airline. So airlines have no pricing power. That's step one. Having said that, then it all comes to the mix of traffic you're carrying. Are you carrying all passengers who are booked 30 days in advance of the lowest fare, or are you getting enough of the mix in the close-in fares? And then are you getting some better connectivity because you're connecting, you have better frequencies, you have better connectivity, and therefore you get a better mix? So the only way you get to a higher yield is not through a higher price per se. You match, you look us up on any of the OTAs, we all match each other, but hopefully, with a better product, with better frequency, with better connectivity, you get a better mix of traffic on board. That's the only way you make yield differentiation. And fortunately for us, we have those advantages, yes.
Great, great. Thanks for that.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mitul Shah from Reliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for giving us this opportunity. My first question is on aircraft in terms of this CEO. So by next year, we earlier indicated that all the CEOs will get out and NEO conversion will happen. So we still stick to that plan.
Yeah. Hello, this is Wolfgang Borgschar here. So our plan is, first of all, I can confirm that we have had and have a very ambitious exchange program, modernization of fleet. So we have totally planned for FY 20 and 2021 until March 22 to exchange something like 100 CEO aircraft with NEO aircraft, with all the advantages the NEO fleet has. And then looking forward further, by end of 22, we should have basically all new fleet. There are a lot of things need to be done, still in progress, but we are confident that we can return to an all new fleet by end of 22.
And sir, after this complete conversion from to NEO, so what would be the, I know that you will not get probably exact numbers, but FY23 onwards, for next 2-3 years, what would be the ballpark indication in terms of new aircraft addition? And also, if you can help me with what would be the combination in terms of finance lease and operating lease, are we okay to have this current 14 numbers as a finance lease, or we still would like to reduce it?
Okay. For the next 2 years, and I'll just talk calendar years, it's easier in my mind, our fleet is really in count, it's not growing much. Marginally, it might go up at 2, 5, those sort of numbers. We have a lot of churn, so we'll take delivery, again, broad numbers, we'll take delivery of 50 airplanes, return 45 airplanes, and so on. But through that process, though, our capacity will go up a little because we are getting a bigger number of A321s. After 2 years, we start seeing the growth in 24, in the year 24 and beyond as the new orders come in. But until then, fleet count remains more or less stable with some capacity growth. There was a second part to your question on?
Yes, sir. So how the incentives are trending?
How the
incentives on SLV are trending now directionally?
We are happy with what we're getting, and we are satisfied.
And that earlier question on finance and lease operating.
Yes, I knew I was missing something. So as you know, we own 14 airplanes, and our plan was to own a few more. However, in the meantime, our balance sheet, as you know, has weakened considerably, and our first goal will be to repair our balance sheet. So we are not eager to go out and pay cash for airplanes at this time. Our first focus is on getting our balance sheet back to a healthy level, and then we'll probably go back to our original plan. As you know, airlines worldwide have a mix of leased versus owned aircraft. We are almost close to 100% leased aircraft, and we'd like to move back a little more towards ownership, but that's a long way off. We need to repair our balance sheet before we even think of that.
Okay, sir. Lastly, I understand it's too early, but if I have a question in terms of April, May vacation, so do you see any inquiry level or compared to like a pre-pandemic kind of people used to inquire 4-5 months before or booking something like that for that period right now?
It's too far. April, May is way too far. I mean, you know, we have a visibility of about 60 days, maybe 90 days. April, May is, no. We have no idea, frankly.
And right now, do you don't see any inquiry levels or even bookings for those periods?
No. I mean, marginal. Might be a couple here and there, but no. Nothing meaningful.
And sir, lastly, on a broader sense, for next 2 years, 3 years point of view, as an industry, how do you see cargo segment growth?
We see rapid growth. We are very bullish. People have asked questions on the cost side. People have asked questions on the revenue side. People have asked questions international versus cargo versus domestic. Look, we see a steadily improving revenue picture. We also are cautiously optimistic that we might get some cost breaks, not because of something heroic that we are going to do, because of actions the government is taking, whether on VAT, whether on bringing MROs in, whether, you know, those sort of government action might help us a little on the cost side. So if you can get the revenue improvement that we anticipate, and if the government helps us a little bit on the cost side, I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Okay, sir, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Arvind Sharma from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening, sir, and thanks for taking my question. Sir, two questions. First of all, on the yield part, so in international travel, which you said is almost back to one-third of the previous levels, I believe it's still mostly bubble flights. As and when you shift from bubble flights to more regular operations, where do you see the yields in that transition?
So you have to think of the structural shifts that are happening, right? So let me take a market, let's say Middle East hubs. They fly wide bodies into our markets. We fly narrow bodies. Now, as you know, wide body cost per seat is almost the same as a narrow body. We are very efficient, but hey, we can't compete against wide bodies. Now, there's more and more structural shift towards non-stops. So take the U.S. market. American just said they'll do Seattle to Bangalore. They'll do JFK to Delhi. United is doing Delhi to Chicago, to Newark, to San Francisco. These non-stops weren't there before. Now, when all these non-stops take traffic away, they're taking traffic away from the Middle Eastern hubs. When that happens, there'll be fewer wide bodies that can come into the Indian market. And if there are fewer wide bodies coming into the Indian market, that's good for a narrow body point to point to the Middle Eastern destinations. So I see that as, you know, as an yield improvement structural shift that will be with us for some time to come.
Got it, sir. So even when the regular flights start, there will not be a marked decline in the yields. That's what we're looking
to. Because I think the shift you will see in Indian aviation is that Tatas will do more non-stops into various markets around us. IndiGo will do various non-stops in the market around us. And therefore, the yields in these sort of big hub markets, whether it's Bangkok or Singapore or Doha, will improve all of us.
Got it, sir. So second
question. It's a long-term picture. It's not going to happen next month. It's a long-term picture.
Right, sir. The second question is on the financials part. I don't know if you can share that. In the reported depreciation amortization expense of 12.5 billion rupees, how much would be the amortization on the ROU assets? And similarly, in the reported interest expense of 5.7 billion rupees, how much would be the interest accrued on the capital equity? Is it possible to share that?
We don't normally share details on these numbers, but I can confirm the amounts. So this is a large portion of the amounts are included in that. So both amortization and this. I can confirm that, but in terms of number, we don't share the numbers.
Sure, sir. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Varun Ginodia from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I have two questions. Number one, your free cash balance increased quarter on quarter despite 20 crore per day cash burn. So if you can provide the liquidity injection measures that you undertook in the quarter gone by, how much did you add it by way of liquidity injection? And what is the amount that you expect to do in the remaining part of the year in second half? And related part to that question is, any update on the QIP, if you can provide that as well, that will be really helpful. That's my first question.
So I'll take the cash part. Our financing initiative, this time we raised about 12 billion. rupees. We did mention last time that we have a visibility of 55 billion during the various measures taken in the quarter. That has increased to now 65. So we have a total visibility of 65, of which we have utilized about 39. This quarter also saw increase in forward sales, which has helped us enhance the number. Plus the contribution numbers in terms of numbers are also looking better. So in an overall basis, if you look at the cash burn, the financing initiatives as far as the forward sales, we have achieved the number, the incremental. And as we speak, our forward sales look stronger in the current month also.
And on the QIP, we've always struggled with this issue because we never felt a need for the cash as such. We don't need it for working capital. We don't need it for capex. It's like, why do we need the cash? And the only answer is it is sort of a flood insurance. We don't know if there's a COVID-3, what happens if the government shuts down again. It's those sort of disaster scenarios that we were looking at the QIP for. So we continue to sort of review it with the board every time we meet, but no decision taken, frankly.
Okay. Just one quick follow-up on the cash burn. So 20 crore per day, if I do that into a quarterly number, that comes to 1,800 crore per day of a cash burn. So your liquidity injection measure should be more than that for cash balance to go up quarter on quarter, right? I thought you mentioned 12 billion liquidity injections in the quarter.
Yeah, we have got 12 billion of that, and we have forward sales also, as I said.
Positive forward sales. That's the remaining portion.
The forward sales is giving us lots of cash coming. Positive. Thank God.
Okay. And second question is, sorry to again harp on the yield side. So one risk that you highlighted on the yields momentum, the positive momentum that we saw in 2Q is, if weaker airlines start, putting down fares to raise cash, my sense is, isn't that a very high probability event given the cash, the broken balance sheets that the other LCCs in the market have? So just wanted to get comfort on this yield number going forward. So that risk looks to be a very probable event to pan out over the coming quarters. So what's your
view? You know the competitor's balance sheet far better than I do because I never look at them. So I really don't know. I can only tell you how the market is behaving and how we are behaving. These sort of risks, as I said, these are not structural. They'll come and go. It might happen, but it won't sustain itself. And you probably have a better understanding of it than I do, frankly.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be taking our last question from the line of Kripa Shankar Ranche from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you for the opportunity. I had a couple of questions. First is on the yield. Sorry to hop on that. I just wanted to check that with the current yields, what would be the break-even load factor given that fuel prices have been increasing in the respective space? So can you highlight on that?
See, load factor and yield, they tend to move in opposite directions, as you know. Ultimately, it's a question of what sort of RASK numbers are we going to produce. And I'm sure the key question in everyone's mind is, when are you guys going to get profitable again, right? I mean, that's the question the board asks me. It's the question we ask ourselves. We don't know, but we are closer to it than we were 2 months ago. We are closer to it than we were 1 month ago. 3 months ago, we wouldn't even dare think of profitability. When we had that huge quarterly loss last time we met with you, no one was thought of profitability. Well, now we're dreaming dreams about profitability again, but we don't know when it'll happen.
Right. No indication on the break-even load factor, perhaps something which we can look forward to?
You know, it would be more sensible to ask for a break-even RASK factor. We know what our unit costs are and what should our RASK be. Because, as I said, we sort of manage between both load factor and means to get to a good RASK number. So we do have that number in mind, but I don't think we're willing to share it yet. And I can only assure you that you're working hard to get there.
One more question from my side is that on the last conference call, you had mentioned that a lot of bookings are getting bunched up towards the last 15 days. Looking at the trend of solid sales, what you have mentioned, and the cash generated, so how are you seeing the yields differential in the less than 15 days versus greater than 15 days channel?
So this is Sanjay. What I can say is we still have some regulation around fares within 15 days. So obviously, the average price during that time is much higher. But as far as booking curve is concerned or booking trends are concerned, we are now, as Rono had mentioned earlier, that we are almost at par with our January 2020 levels as far as the booking curves are concerned. We are getting almost 30% of our booking 30 days out of the total booking which we are getting on the day of booking. So we are seeing a booking curve now getting to a pre-COVID level of January 2020, which is a very healthy sign and a good sign, because if you book in advance and we are able to kind of push the load factor up to the requirement level, required level. So that is what we are seeing right now in the marketplace.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question for today. In case you have any further questions, feel free to reach the Investor Relations team of IndiGo. On behalf of IndiGo, that concludes this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.